Margaret is telling her story tonight, and I can't wait to see what she has to say. Welcome, Margaret.
Hi, I'm Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm also Irish and Catholic, so I do two things well. I can drink, and I can feel guilty. So, I was raised in Ireland. Parents who loved me. I was the middle of three children. And my parents wanted nothing better for us than a good education. And out of the three of us, they had two RNs and a high school teacher. And this is from parents who left school when they were 14. So my dad was a very gentle man, very unassuming, happy in his rose garden and his greenhouse. And I used to soar when I was told that I was like him. And my mother kicked ass. You did your homework and you went to Mass on Sunday. You got home before dark, and you were good to people, and you didn't play with the tinkers in the short green, the gypsies, because they would, quote, steal the eye out of your head. And I remember spending 6 hours on a flight journaling about if my mother had only understood me better, my life wouldn't be this bad. When in actual fact, all she did was instill in me values and principles. And for that, I'm very grateful. So, Ireland was a good place to grow up. We spent the days on the beach, and we dressed up, and I had friends who had sisters. So, one of them had six sisters, and we played what we called swanky women. And got all dressed up in our fancy clothes and our hats and mother's handbags and headed off down to the beach. And we just thought we were it. So at 18... I left home and I went to nursing school in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. And it was around that time that the troubles in Belfast, in Northern Ireland, started. And I watched Catholics and Protestants killing one another on the streets. And I remember spending hours in the OR, helping put people back together again. And they were using these dum-dum bullets where there was a little hole on the front, and when you turned them over, their backs were missing. So, good training, good discipline. So when I'd finished my 4 years there, I decided I want to specialize, and I went into a nurse midwifery program in Edinburgh in Scotland. And the first 6 months I was there, I did well in school. And then in the last 6 months, I met the guy. And he was tall and good-looking and had his own business and a flash car. And I was in love. And about a year of feeling all happy and carefree, And we traveled to Canada and London and Spain. He'd been home to meet my parents, and I got the ring. And one night, this woman came to the door. And my apartment door was open, so she just walked in. And she said to me, "Do you want his four kids as well?" And it was the first I knew that she existed. And it was right then that I made the biggest mistake of my life. When he turned to me and asked me, "Do you want me to go or stay?" Because she said to him, "Come home with me. Your kids need you." So I said, "Stay." And with that, all the values and principles that I'd been taught went away. And I thought about me. And for the first time in my life, I said, "I need a drink." And I was 21. And we went to a pub, ironically called The World's End. And I got drunk. And I still remember there was nothing like that first swallow, burning away all the guilt and the anxiety. And that started what I call my booze-soaked life. And the drinking got worse. And I started drinking every single day. And it was a sad day when I couldn't get a drink. So that relationship went off and on for about 8 years. Every time I thought about his kids needing him, I drank. My parents couldn't get their arms around this. They just couldn't take it. So every time I thought about them, I drank. And then finally I left Edinburgh and I decided I'd simplify my life, get away from the drama, and went off to a little town on the border between England and Scotland. And I thought, I joined a health club and I started playing squash, which is like racquetball. And I got pretty good at it. But I still couldn't stop drinking. And it was getting worse. So as I go on, you'll see that I became the queen of geographical cures. And after about 2 years of living in that small town, I decided I'm going to make some money, and I'm going to go home to Ireland, and I'm going to quit drinking, and I'm going to build a house. So the quickest way for me to make money was to go to Saudi Arabia. And I did. And I arrived in Saudi Arabia, a little worse for wear, all those little bottles of wine and vodka. Every time that little cart went up and down, I had another one. And I thought, I'm going to be okay when I get there because I'm not going to be able to drink anymore because it's a dry country. So I was met by someone who was to become very, very important to me. And he was doing hospital orientation to the place where I was going. And when I got into the car, our eyes met for a minute in the rearview mirror. And I thought, he's kind of cute. And it took him 3 weeks to ask me out and 10 days to ask me to marry him. And that will be 30 years come August. And I admire everything that the man stands for, how he treats people, and how he views the world. And when I look at how he loves his daughter, I go, I made such a good choice. I hit the jackpot with that one. But I wasn't going to uphold the drinking rule. Alcoholics will find drink anywhere. So, I made my own wine. And I remember I was so desperate to drink it that I couldn't wait for it to ferment. So I would suck it out of that thing that you put in this 5-gallon drum thing. And I bought it on the black market. And the stuff that you buy was called Siddiqui, which is friend for Arabic. I mean Arabic for friend. And it was 180% proof. And I drank it, and I walked around for 4 years with gastritis. It just was awful stuff. And you could smell it off people's skin. It was so strong. But it did. I was an alcoholic. And I remember one bad day in particular. And I was in the delivery room doing a delivery. And I had what every midwife dreads, and that's a shoulder dystocia. And what that means is that the head was out, but the shoulders were stuck. And I was drunk. It was a Christmas morning. And the room was spinning. And I said to myself, I am going to lose this baby, or this mother, or both. And I'm drunk in Saudi Arabia, and I'm going to go to jail, and they're going to throw away the key. And Saudi Arabia's jails are not pretty. And I swore off drink that day. I thought, never again. This is it. And the very next day, I was drinking again. So after 4 years there, John and I had gotten married secretly, because there's a little rule in Saudi that if a single woman gets married, that it's complicated, but the company that you work for is responsible for you. But if you get married, then your husband is responsible for you, and they just had a rule, don't get married. But I did. And we moved to San Francisco, and John went to graduate school. And then I had the biggest gig of my life. And I had my daughter, Kate. And I had enough medical knowledge and enough savvy to know that I couldn't drink while I was pregnant. I had a cousin who had a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome, and I knew not to drink while I was pregnant or while I was nursing. And the day Kate was born was the happiest day of my life. And at that time in San Francisco, and I guess other places as well, they gave you what was called a steak dinner after you delivered. And they had wine with it. So I had my wine, I had John's wine, and I asked for two Percocet. For an alcoholic, it's never enough. The happiest day of my life, and I had to go that little bit further. I have to take it to the next level. So anyway, after I had stopped nursing, I got my first job, very great job, and in this posh hospital in Pacific Heights. And their marketing thing was, there was a view of the Golden Gate Bridge from every room. And it was there that I learned all about happy hour. And then, after a while, I started getting all melancholy and depressed. And I said to John, you know, Kate really needs to be with her grandparents. I need to go back to live in Ireland. So I convinced him, pulled him away from his career, and we went to Ireland to live. And I wasn't home 2 weeks until I realized that the whole decision was based on nostalgia rather than reality. And I just couldn't get into this small town, Ireland. The gossip just didn't interest me, and I found out that there was a reason why there was the Atlantic Ocean between myself and my family, and that I was loved better from afar. So, after about 6 months, I said, to hell with this. Let's go to London. So we went to London, and it wasn't such a bad move, really, because my dad got lung cancer. And I traveled to London, to Dublin, to see him. And I remember there was a liquor store on the corner going up to the hospital, and I would go in and get my bottle of vodka, and I just couldn't tolerate the sadness and the fear and the loneliness in his eyes. And he was sad mostly because he didn't want to leave Kate. And there was something very special between them. So anyway, after 6 months or so, I tackled John again, and I said, let's go back to the States. So we went off to New Orleans. And there, I didn't like the weather, I didn't like the food, and I didn't like the jazz. I didn't even like Mardi Gras. And I hated me. I was getting deeper into alcoholism. And I developed an eating disorder. And at 90 pounds, I weighed less than a golden retriever. And by now, John just didn't know what to do with me. And I begged him to try out for a job in Brussels, in Belgium. So off we went back to Europe. Then back to the States after another year and a half, whatever. And we went back to Reno, Nevada. And no matter where I went, there I was. And the last stop was Atlanta. And Kate went to school. John went to work for Coca-Cola. And I went to work at West Paces Hospital. Fantastic job. And there was a woman there called Anne. And she impressed me because she spoke freely about being an alcoholic and being in AA. And she hinted to me what my life could be like. Because I was making this superhuman effort at being normal. And I was tired. I was just tired. So I came to Nava one night. And I made two attempts to get from the parking lot to that door. And my pride was wrestling with my pain. And when I did sit down, it took all of me not to bail. But I came back night after night. And even if I was overtaken by this raging need to drink, I still came back. And my recovery was slow because the damage was really deep. And I had to learn to soothe myself in a whole different way. But I didn't drink. I didn't drink. And I got a sponsor. And she was a huge influence in my life. And for the next 13 years, she breathed life into me. And my days of sipping wine, watching America's Next Top Model were over. And she got me into the steps. And Anne, this woman at work, knew my story, but I still didn't have enough courage to tell on myself. I had to be this very efficient nurse. And I had this image to upkeep. And I met a priest called Father Ed. A lot of you may know him. And he told me, Margaret, half measures avail us nothing. And we have to be prepared to go to any length. So I finally went to my boss. And I said to her, Peggy, I'm in trouble. And there was no cautionary advice. And all she did was give me a hug and said, let's get you to personnel so we can get you paid while you go into treatment. Another incredible woman in my life. And even in treatment, I was trying to nail pride. I still had this image, this fake image, where I was dying inside. And I remember calling Anne when I was in treatment. And I said, Anne, what am I going to do when I go back to work? Everybody's going to be talking. when I carry the narcotic keys, they're going to be watching me. And she said, Margaret, you're not that important. And I was sore fronted. I thought, what a bitch. But I heard her. I heard what she was saying. And it got me into humility. And my recovery has not been all sunshine and rainbows and puppies. Kate got cancer when she was 18. And I'd come in here to the 7:30 meeting and just cry. And you blew me away with your gentleness. And what you said was meaningful and earnest. And I was loved. And I didn't drink. And then a few years later, I hit a brick wall of depression. I was in the wrong job and I was on this shitload of medication. And I find this doctor who said, we've got to get you off all this stuff. Those meds are all working against one another. And if you will eat right and exercise, I will help you do that. And I bought into that, and very carefully, over a period of 6 months, she titrated the meds down, and I came into my own. And I hadn't realized how absent I was from a big part of my life being so drugged up. But I was very, very careful to do what she told me to do. I wouldn't recommend that anybody get off meds without a doctor's advice and real carefully. And I never, ever give advice about meds. But because of that history of depression, I was able to relate to a lot of people in AA. And it's suffering. It's real suffering. I mean, it was an insurmountable task to get out of bed and have a shower. So, and I also joined a gym and I got a trainer. And she too is an amazing woman. She kicks butt. And when I think that I have nothing left to give, she'll say, bad never felt so good. And she keeps me going. And she'll remind me to be humble, and she'll say things like, I don't want you coming in here showing off, lifting weights that are too heavy for you. There's always that little nudge, if I'm open to humility, that I get reminded about. And it all works together. Meetings and literature. And I go to church every day, which is totally not necessary. But it helps me where I do my prayer and meditation after the 7:30 meeting every day. And AA just blows me away with its gentleness and its intensity and its nurturing. And it transfers over to all areas of my life. And I have a happy marriage. I live in a happy household. And I'm so grateful for that. And it maximizes the good in me. And it gives me energy and it makes me feel good about myself. And you just can't grade that. There are just not enough adjectives. And I use meetings every day as a defensive shield against drinking. And it releases me from being overly concerned about myself. My favorite line in the Big Book, it's not even a sentence, but it's on page 86, and it says, "We'll relax and take it easy." And that's what I've learned to do. And I'm no longer waking up with that dready feeling. I'm much more calm and methodical and disciplined. And I'm quiet on the inside. That's what I always wanted, to be quiet on the inside. And I'm outgoing and happy and even-keeled. I'm not as mercurial as my husband used to call me. And cancer came a calling to my family just a couple of months ago when John was diagnosed with melanoma. And again, I didn't drink. And thank God they got it all. And we're happy. And I won't compromise my principles, and therefore I avoid the cliff. And I'm open to learning every day, especially from the newcomers. I have a friend here who talks, if you're talking about time, I'm way ahead of him. But he talks about compassion on a daily basis. And he can see compassion in the most senseless of situations. And I learn from him. And I learn from my sponsees. And they keep me fresh. And I see their efforts. And I never want to get away from that. Ever. And it's so good not to have that feeling of barely contained hysteria going on inside me. And I actually have the ability to filter my thoughts. That's new. And I'm able to take the focus off me and connect with people and make them feel valued and appreciated. And it's effortless. When I'm helping another alcoholic, it's such a freedom. It's amazing. It's what it's all about. My life has changed. So, if you really rest in us, this is the place to be. And the world is better for people like us. And I think I'm done a little early, but that's okay.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's takes me where the promises are in. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window, for a heart that beats for me, takes me where the promises are.